Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. I'm filling in for Big Steve, CJ Sports. With me in the studio is Chris, get a little caution flag, Brayton, as always. Chris, how you doing tonight? Maybe Chris is not there. I thought that was Chris. Is that you, Chris?
Hello?
There, I hear you.
Should I say it one more time? How the hell are you?
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good there. Mr. CJ Sports getting ready for another fast talk hour of racing, and the upcoming 2017 race season is officially upon us. We'll try to keep some hot topics flowing along tonight. Don't have any guests as of right now. We haven't scheduled any. We're still waiting to see if we have the return of Big Sweat, Mr. Steve Billmeyer. Shout out to Steve and hope that he's getting better. We should have some news on him pretty soon here, but we'll have the old man calling in here later on in the evening. I think Mr. Steve has a few hot topics he wants to discuss with us here tonight, but you know, we're going to keep an open room here, Mr. CJ Sports. It's Daytona. It's Speed Weeks. It's, man, this is the epic center. You know, Super Bowls and World Series, they all come at the end of the year. Racing's the exact opposite. Our biggest race of the year has always been the Daytona 500. It's kind of a week of celebration, and, you know, it's also not a Daytona 500 has gone by since the loss of Dale Earnhardt that it hasn't also been a memoir, you know, a memory of a legend in racing. And, you know, I don't know about you, Mr. CJ Sports, but every year around this time, it's always a tear or two that falls for a man that I think single-handedly held racing at his grasp. And since then, I believe our sport's really searched for that kind of magnitude of Mr. CJ Sports, a hero for the common man. And I think it's really hard these days when you have athletes like LeBron James and baseball players and football players making hundreds of millions of dollars. The common man is really common values and common interests are not the same anymore as athletes. And I think, you know, I was listening to Jason Whitlock earlier. He was filling in for Colin Cowherd. And Whitlock has had a lot of things that I haven't agreed with since he's been on with Colin. But ever since Colin's been out this week, he's started on a few rants that I think have been needing to be aired out. And that's that a lot of times these athletes these days, these superstars, these so-called heroes, they're not on the same pedestal that they once were. And what I mean by that is they're star athletes. A lot of them, the ages of 8 and 9 and 10 years old, they're predestined to be something. You know, LeBron James, for instance, you know, he was out of high school. He was projected to be the king. Would he save the NBA? And you know, over the last 15 years, I'd say he has. He's definitely brought the NBA back to the point where Michael Jordan was. But, you know, these days, between the recruitments and the money that's involved in the sports, we pretty much know those who are predestined ahead of time, and that gives a special privilege to these athletes. And a lot of them, they don't speak on the personal level that, you know, some of the older athletes, or especially the legend of Dale Earnhardt. I mean, you know, he was a farmer 5 days a week and went to the track the other 2 days of the week and was a race car driver. I think the sport in itself has not replaced an icon such as him, and we may not ever. And you know, CJ, I read an article today, and it was on one of the ESPN sites. I shared it, and it was about Dale Earnhardt. And I don't have the article right here in front of me. It's something like racing is my life, or racing in my life, or something like that. And it just was a great article that really talked about some things that I think a lot of people don't understand about the Dale Earnhardt Jr. story, and it, you know, it's just a really good read. And if you haven't read it already, go to ESPN. I'm sure it's on the front page of their article. So, but you know, like I said, it's a weekend, a week of memoirs and a week of celebration, and you know, get to see all the new paint schemes come out. It's 42 cars on this year's entry list. That's what I want to open the segment up with tonight, CJ. 42 cars out of a 40-car field. That means two cars are going to go home. Does that diminish the excitement for the twin 125s?
No. And if I remember that right, in the 125s, they getting pointed this year. They get points for that. So I like that idea. I think that's going to help the 125s. Daytona is not, and you said a week, and I just kept thinking to myself, no, it's more like 10 days. Like, this is, like, you wish every weekend or every race could be like Daytona, where it's 10 days of festivities and just, and I know that's what kind of separates it from everything else. And, you know, the 125, you know, I would always, if I was home, I would make a point to watch it, but I wouldn't go out of my way, because we watch the same thing every year. You watch those that already got the pole, they're going to get out of the way. Those that are, you know, are locked in, they're only going to try so hard. The only ones that are really trying are those that need to get in by their position. And this year, now that you add points, that you get pointed for it, I think the 125s, I think this is going to be the first year that, for me, it's going to be a must-watch on the 125s.
So you're basically looking into it as basically this is the heat races to the 500.
Yeah. I mean, now you're getting
and only two go home, and those are probably going to be through mechanical failures or something within the race. And, you know, it really does. I think competition's probably going to be better this year, and it takes a lot of – yeah, interesting point, CJ, because we can always go to the negative side, but here you are popping the positive, and I like that. We can pop the positive like we pop champagne bottles on this show, because the way I feel about it as well is it takes a lot of pressure off of some of these guys, some of these Timmy Hills and Matt Diamandettos, and it really just allows them to focus on making their car better for the show. So a very interesting point there.
I like the concept. It's just hard to believe that, you know, I can only imagine how short the off season is for these drivers. It don't matter if it's Sprint Cup or the Monster Cup, all the way down to your local Friday and Saturday night guys and ladies. Like, I can imagine how short the off season feels to them. It just felt like I was just done doing interviews. I felt like I just interviewed. No, and we're finishing up the season, and here started last week on the One Ten Nation Sports Show, we got the guys and the ladies back in the studio, and we're talking about Daytona a week or so away. We're talking about the K&M Pro Series starting down there in New Smyrna, how you pronounce it. It's just hard to see how
New Smyrna.
Everything.
New Smyrna.
It's amazing how quickly the season comes back around. It's like. Like, we didn't even get an off-season when it came to racing.
Oh, I'm telling you, Mr. CJ Sports, and you'll understand why I take off most of the time from Thanksgiving to the first of the year sometime, because, I mean, literally, that's the time that we get. That's the time that you get to refocus and rechart and breathe. So I give it to you. You know, you're 24-7. This is your operation, and you keep things moving along at 110 for us to be able to talk about. And I tell you, it's a complete reset. Whatever last year happened, you know, go ahead and store that away. We're rolling on into the 2017 season. I think that this year is going to be so much, you know, more popular. It's going to be the lower series, because we already understand as viewers and commentators and analysts that, you know, racing's fixing to take a big dip. I think in the 90s when we were seeing a change there with Darrell Waltrip leaving and other drivers, you know, we already had the group of young stock that was there, Rusty Wallace and Jeff Gordon. He was, you know, he was already, you know, kind of putting his foot down. And Each time that this has come along, NASCAR's kind of been behind the step, and where's the talent going to come from? I think we're in a different stage now to where we have so much talent. It's like, who's mm-hmm. the next guy that they're going to pull from the litter? You know, is it going to yeah. be we've already seen Eric Jones and Daniel Suarez yep. already picked, you know. We were looking at a time where we couldn't get Justin Allgaier into a cup car. Now, all of a sudden, we got guys who have zero cup experience or only limited nationwide or truck series experience jumping off into the fold. And with the soon departure of drivers like, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and, you know, some of the older cats, Ryan Newman, how much longer is he going to race? And Jimmy Johnson, of course, you know. I think Jimmy Johnson and Tom Brady are going to retire around the same time. What do you think? Are we going to open our eyes one day in the era of Tom Brady and Jimmy Johnson? Is it really going to be over with, Mr. CJ Sports, or is this all just a looping dream and they're going to forever be winning races and Super Bowls? Tell me. I'd love your take on that one.
I think
NASCAR finally found a way to beat Jimmy Johnson, or is it just going to be the Super Bowl all over again?
I tell you what, the competition level is getting to a point that I don't think NASCAR is going to beat Jimmy Johnson. I think the talent level is finally getting there. I think Joe Gibbs Racing and Furniture Row, I think they're finally getting it. But it just seems like always Hendrick Motorsports was just ahead of everybody. They adapted to the COT car faster than everybody else. They adapted to the chase rules faster than everybody else. It's like they almost had the glass ball and they were able to see the future and stay one step ahead of everybody. But I think everybody's finally catching up. Toyota and their program, and now you've got four dynamite drivers over there at Joe Gibbs Racing, and you've got the experience with Truex and a hot rookie in Eric Jones. I just see the changes happening.
Well, you know, the status with Eric Jones is even, you know, you have to consider what's going on there is unprecedented. What's going on with Chris Buescher being in a Chevrolet but under a Ford contract, it's unprecedented. These things are in the situation they are because of the depth of the talent and obviously the evolution of the sport. We're coming into a newer age, a brighter age, I believe.
Almost definitely. You know, that's one of the greatest things about having the show and like the 110 Nation Sports Show the last 3 years that we've been on the air. I have got to see, you know, I loved racing growing up, but I didn't really appreciate it and I didn't really understand where and how all these drivers got to where they were at. And having the opportunities over this last 3-4 years, whatever it is, and interview and have conversations with all these up and coming talent and see where it all begins and be able to watch as, you know, there's a lot of drivers that are in the K&N Pro, the ARCA Series, the Xfinity Series, Truck Series that we got the opportunity to watch and learn about them when they were still Friday, Saturday night at their local track. And I've got the opportunity to watch them grow up and you know, advance their career to where they're at now. And it's very exciting to see all this talent. And NASCAR, I think, is finally lucked out where there's not going to be a dry spot of, okay, we're not going to have that next big thing. NASCAR is really going to have to figure out how to market this. You know, there for a while, for the longest time, the rookie of the year was not racing no more. Like, there was a big gap where, for the longest time, the rookie of the year never longer raced. And I think Denny Hamlin was the first one that changed that. He's still in, and I think every rookie of the year after that is in now or whatever. But
well, Kevin Conway is a great example of how horrible the rookie of the year system had gotten.
Yes.
And then, of course, I think we had the epic Ricky versus Danica not too long after that. And, you know, each year we've kind of popped off with some surprising, decent rookie of the year battles. I think Trevor Bayne, you know, that was kind of a big surprise being a rookie. But, you know, it's definitely been a lot of talent that's come up through the NASCAR ranks. And as you said, getting to know drivers like Spencer Boyd and Grant Effenfinger and some of these other drivers, you know, it's been an awesome experience because these guys are getting more exposure now than they ever have. And like I said, it really excites me about what's going to come up this year with all the publicity and all the coverage now coming into some of the shorter tracks, the ARCA series. And, you know, people are interested in what's going on in the Nationwide series. So it kind of, you know, they want to say cup racing's at its worst, but I want to say that, you know, we kind of talked about this last week, NASCAR's all in general, I think it's a pretty healthy sport because you've got all this publicity going into these younger drivers. And, you know, we want to talk about the new and fresh talent, but then, of course, you've got the dictatorship of Jimmy Johnson and Chad Knaus, and they stink up the shows all the time. I mean, you know, if you told the fans right now at the beginning of the 2017 race season that, hey, Jimmy Johnson's going to win the championship, I think you would see at least a quarter drop-off for the Daytona 500 because it would be like, well, there's no point. But that just shows how you try to play a game and there's always somebody there to outsmart the system and give credit where credit's due. Chad Knaus has been an expert at figuring out how to work around NASCAR. He is the master of the gray area. I was watching a lot of NASCAR stuff here this week and just here probably a couple hours ago they had a thing on about Smokey Unic and, you know, all the changes and the geniusness that he brought to racing. You know, he worked in the gray. If they said that you couldn't, he found a way that you could. And that still goes on in racing, but NASCAR's got their finger on it now. You know, my father, he'll be on here in a minute to tell us about some changes that NASCAR's implementing. That's going to be a hot topic to talk about. But basically, to kind of give you a sneak peek of what we're going to talk about here in a few minutes is NASCAR's going to penalize drivers now, not on Tuesday. And this could completely shake up everything. We're talking about how, last week we were talking about how NASCAR's trying to zone in on the competition, put everybody on a level playing field by this, you know, by the repair changes and other systems like that. It was already announced this week Hendrick would send a whole trailer full of parts to the races for all the teams that, you know, it's interchangeable parts. But now they've shut that rig down. So, you know, the little guy won. He doesn't have to worry about the extra fuel cost to send that trailer to compete with the Hendrick operation. So, you know, NASCAR's focusing in on this area, and they feel that inspection, if you fail at inspection, then they're going to handle it there, or they're going to re-inspect you, I think, three different times after. In other words, they have like three stages, I believe, CJ Sports, of how they do inspection. And if you flunk one, they would send you back, but you had already passed the other two. Well, then that gave the opportunity for teams to manipulate the cars. And so now NASCAR is going to make you go through all three steps of inspection. So we'll talk about that a little bit more here in just a minute. I do need some moment to send out some local news. Of course, the Daytona 500 is right around the corner, but so is dirt track racing. It's already started down in Speed Weeks this week at East Bay and Volusia and all those great dirt tracks down there on the Florida coast. But when those race cars leave the coast, they'll be coming home to your hometowns because the 2017 dirt track season is fast approaching. We will be racing next weekend at Wynot Motorsports Park on Saturday night for the U.S. MTS Modifieds. They'll be making their debut, and man, I tell you what, these are the top dog Modifieds, the ones for the Midwest. It's a show you won't want to miss. They will be racing Friday night, the night before, up in Jackson Motor Speedway there in Jackson, Mississippi, Byron, Mississippi, as a matter of fact. Mr. B.J. Donald and Mississippi Dirt Track Racing will be up there doing that coverage from Jackson Motor Speedway on Friday night. And like I said, they'll come down to Wynot Motorsports Park for a Saturday night event. It's going to be a way to kick off the season here in the Southeast. There's a whole lot of other racing going on coming up at the first weekend of March. I do believe the icebreaker will be down at the track, the Deep South Speedway, and I believe that's it's down in South Alabama. I can't think of the name of the town real quick. But also LA 36 over at St. Tammany Raceway in Louisiana. They'll be opening up that weekend as well. As long, along with Hattiesburg Speedway, they're your weekly Friday night racetrack. So dirt track season is right around the corner. Also, while we're talking about dirt tracks real quick, Mr. CJ Sports, did you hear about the Scott Blomquist rule being thrown out there in the late model series, the Lucas Oil late model series? Did you read about that one?
No, I missed that.
All right. Well, here's the deal, and it stirred up a whole lot of stuff. So on average, a lot of good drivers, they always show up to the dirt tracks late. They go ahead and roll on through inspection, then they come out there. Well, Blomquist is obviously probably the best at it. And so what Lucas Oil did to counteract Blomquist's behavior, especially since he's the defending champion and can just fall to the rear of the field at the start of the race without racing B mains or anything, they implemented a rule saying that the car had to be there within 15 minutes before the closure of tech. If not, then the car would not qualify for the race. So it did stir up a lot of gestures in the dirt track world. And if you're listening in and you have any take on that, we'd love to hear your opinion on the new Blomquist rule. And once again, it just shows that in racing, we all believe in the gray area, and if there's a way to beat them, there's a way to do it. But, you know, Blomquist, you're going to have to quit partying over there in that motorhome and get your tail on over to Tech Line. And before you know it, Blomquist, they'll be asking you to show up for a driver's meeting. I know that would probably be hard for Blomquist to do, but, you know, we all love his hair products and glad that he's an official sponsor of Vidal Sassoon or whatever it is that he claims he puts in his hair. So, Mr. CJ Sports, what all do you have for this weekend? I know you've had a lot of guests on and all, and I know you've got something to talk about through 110 before we bring on our special analysis for the time being, Mr. Steve Creighton. I do want you to give in your shout-out, so.
Had a great
Uh-oh. Over there? Mike Perricone, thank you for listening in. Don't know what happened. Mr. CJ, you there?
Can you hear me?
Did you drop the microphone?
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Obviously, you don't hear me.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Technical difficulties, you know, that's just the way it is. We live, our studio is next to a graveyard. You never know what's going to happen.
We had Gus Dean and Justin Fauté from Winchong Racing on earlier this week. We also had Leilani Mueller. She's the vegan-powered 15 machine over there at Venturini Motorsports. We just had a lot of great guests. I think we had about 6 or 7 guests this week. Tomorrow night, we got a great show on Hot Laps that's planned out for you guys. Very excited about that. Derek, and I am not – I'm going to go with Derek D because I know I'm going to mess that up. He works for NBC Sports. He will be out there this weekend doing coverage. And Young from Bronson. Peter Milano from pitstoppitbull.com. And the photographer at Riverhead Raceway. So you guys need to check that out. I got to make sure real quick before we do, before I give it back over, I need to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, Napu Seasoning, High Sports Network, and Mile High Radio. Without these marketing partners and networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we're growing. So I got to thank all of them.
All right. That's right. Well, we'll be waiting on Steve to call in here in just a minute. Of course, that's Steve Creighton. He's my dad, longtime NASCAR fan, long haul truck driver, future internet superstar, big old boy. He'll be calling, joining us here in a minute. But you know, I guess we'll go into this one, this segment real quick. Who's your favorite to win the Daytona 500?
Wow.
I have to give you mine real quick since I caught you off guard. Kyle Busch. I mean, he's just the first name that comes to mind, and I guess that's the pick I'm sticking with. Kyle Busch for the Daytona 500.
Now, I want to see how the Stewart Haas Fords do in practice and qualifying. I'm hoping that Stewart Haas is going to make Ford competitive again. It's been a while since Ford has really been that competitive, and I'm hoping that this merger, this partnership helps put Ford back on the map. Not that I'm a big Ford guy, but I like the competition. I want to see, you know, all three brands and possibly Ford. They're talking about expanding back into a fourth. I want to see them all be competitive. I want to see a rotation of winners. And so I would like to see that, but I agree. Kyle Busch, I was going to say anybody from Joe Gibbs Racing, to include, I wouldn't be surprised to see either rookie Eric Jones or Daniel Suave with Joe Gibbs Racing or the satellite of Joe Gibbs Racing to win it. So this might be one of those years that we see a rookie Daytona 500, you know, a rookie driver win the Daytona 500. There's two really, really talented drivers driving very, very good Toyotas this year.
Mike Perricone put in his pick. He said Elliott Sadler for Tommy Baldwin Racing. Wouldn't that be great to see a small-time car like that take the victory and hopefully would secure him some sponsorship to race the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think that's the big reason we want to see Tommy Baldwin, because we asked the question, and I don't think it was ever really answered when we had him on Hot Laps and Stats a few weeks ago, is if you win the Daytona, if Elliott Sadler puts Tommy Baldwin machine in victory lane, does that change your mindset? You go from a partial schedule to going ahead and run for the championship, since now you kind of locked yourself into the chase. And, of course, sponsor dollars are going to, you know, dictate that. But I think that's a big part of why me and Mike and myself are pulling for Elliott Sadler. And obviously Mike having his a relationship with Tommy Baldwin and knowing him personally, obviously, I think, you know, another reason. But a big part of it is we would like to see him have to make that decision. Do we stick with a partial schedule, or now that we're in the chase and now, you know, this new format, do we find sponsorship and make a run at it?
Well, and rumor is Alex Bowman has a ride for a few races throughout the year. So that may lead to a Tommy Baldwin injury for Alex Bowman, who, you know, formerly drove for Tommy Baldwin. You know, Tommy, here's the one question I have. Are they still claiming what series they can run a championship for? Because Elliott Sadler would obviously be claiming a championship for the Nationwide Series and not the Cup Series. So, you know, we've talked about this rule a long time ago. Does that actually affect maybe a big-time sponsor from coming in and picking up the tab or the check for the rest of the year? Because, you know, that person is racing full-time in the Nationwide Series, so he's claimed the points there, and he wins the Daytona 500, but he's no longer eligible for the championship. I've always kind of questioned that rule right there.
Do they have to? I mean, I don't know the exact rule. Can they switch that for after the Daytona? Like they, Tommy Baldwin and Elliott.
Unfortunately, not. That's the way it's been ruled, or understood in the rule that you cannot do that. So, I guess it could always be a Tommy Baldwin rule, but I really think that was something NASCAR didn't pre-plan or think about that happening, because I mean it happened in 2011 with Trevor Bayne, so you know, and unfortunately he didn't get a sponsorship for the rest of the year. You know, it was terrible to see that team have to take a weekend off when after having such a, you know, an awesome start. But Wood Brothers is finally back at the track full time, and back to what you were talking about earlier, how these other teams are improving a lot. Well, you know, I think it comes down to survival. These teams like Front Row and Furniture Row, they've learned how to survive in the sport, because obviously there's been a lot of other teams formed, come and gone, and ended up in litigation in between the time of, you know, the startups of Furniture Row and Front Row. Both of these teams have been around since the middle of 2000, you know, since the middle of the 2000s period. So, you know, they've obviously endured and watched a lot of companies come and go since then. And Tommy Baldwin as well. You know, I hate to see such a great operation, you know, small time gig shut down. Because it used to be that if a driver went into a underfunded team, then he was going to get pretty much chosen like a Landon Castle. Once he left Hendrick and went to a smaller team, he never got the chance to go back to a superstar team. But what seems to be happening now is just being in the car and getting the seat time is actually going to be the next stepping stone to getting a good ride. For instance, Alex Bowman or Eric Amarola even.
I got Steve in the studio for you, Chris.
Hello? Steve, you on there?
Yeah, I'm here. How y'all doing?
All right. Glad to have you on again for this weekend, for this week. Got some hot topics to talk about. First of all, would you like to give your introduction?
Yeah, I'm Steve Creighton. I'm Chris, you're my son there. And I appreciate you giving me a chance to, you know, get on here and be in the air for a couple of minutes here. And, you know, up here in nice, ice-cold Kentucky tonight.
Then don't use my cord. Yeah, we're glad to have you, Dad, and Steve. I'm going to call you on the radio here. But, you know, a rumor started out the very first of the week. I know you have a little bit of interest in the cousin Carl, and being a Ford man that you are. Rumor hit Monday that Carl, and this rumor was denied, but Carl Edwards was being paid by Penske to sit out the 2017 season, and possibly Daniel Suarez's father could be the purchaser of Joe Gibbs Racing. Now, that was a lot of ifs in between that, but Steve, I want to get your take on that real quick.
Well, that was all debunked earlier today. They had on NASCAR Radio, they had a guy said that's all made up, and it got started by a rumor by someone, and they said it is totally, totally false, not true.
So Donald Trump would say this is fake news.
There you go. I think what I am more interested in is the new policies that NASCAR came out with today, and the policies about where that the penalties will be accessed before the race. Now, I'm going to tell you, the hardest one is they take your hard card all the way up to you set on pit road and you start out three laps down. You could actually start the Daytona 500 and be three laps down and are also in the negative in points if they take points. I mean, it's something that I think should have been done years and years and years ago. And also, when you go through tech now, you go through three tech inspections. Well, used to you go through one, you get your sticker, then go through the next and get your sticker. And then third time, they might say, okay, well, you got to come back to third station. Well, that's not the way it is any longer. If you fail one of the three, you got to go all the way back to the beginning of it, get your sticker, and all. So what they discovered was last year and that people were manipulating the cars after they had went through that one inspection. And they're not saying, but, you know, they kind of point a lot of fingers at the 48 that it went through this inspection.
Now, is this just hearsay, or do you have any substantial evidence to back this up?
That's just hearsay.
Could be the gray area that we were just talking about earlier there, CJ.
But there's no fake
news on 110 Nation.
There you go. But one thing was, though, you know, he was pulled out of line, and he did have to fix that the A post or B post, whatever it was. They had to fix it, and they had just a few minutes to fix it. At that point in time, you know, I said to myself, park him, load him up in the hauler, say bye, see you next year, Jimmy. But they not going to do that. You know, they got too much money.
Interesting,
in there.
Real quick. I want to bring it back to the three laps down. So basically, Steve, what they're saying is if you get these penalties assessed to you, they're not going to wait till Tuesday. They're going to handle it there at the track, and the Daytona 500 could start, and your tail is going to be sitting on pit lane waiting for your three laps. Could that not – I mean, CJ, put your mind in this real quick. Could you imagine the wait for three laps on the pit lane for the Daytona 500? How would that – I mean, how would that affect the driver's morale?
You know, you got your pros and cons with that, with the whole lucky dog and this new stage format. You know, there's going to be guaranteed two yellows at, you know, one at lap, what, 50 and one lap, 60 or 120, whatever.
Right.
It is.
So, right.
you know that you're going to get the lucky dog. So, you go down to three laps early in the race, I don't think they're as bad as it could be, but yeah, I could imagine how aggravating it would be to start off already three laps down and you're going to be playing, you know, trying to play catch up, at least for the first handful of races because you went.
Well, you know, and this is something that is not necessarily, I mean, it's not something new to NASCAR. I can remember Dale Earnhardt, I think it was at Bristol, I think middle 90s, NASCAR penalized him three different times, or was it at Charlotte? I can't remember. Anyway, they penalized him three different times. Dale Earnhardt was three laps down, and he come back and won that race. I think that, you know, like you were considering the lucky dog and the staging, and so now you have guaranteed cautions. It is a way to balance out the effect. In other words, it sounds like it's a heavy death blow, but NASCAR's kind of giving you a way to earn it back. Now, Steve, you also said something earlier when it was just me and you talking about the pit stalls and how this is really going to play into what pit stall you want. And let's get your theory on that real quick before we go back to what you were talking about.
All right. Well, the theory on that is the number one pit stall is still going to be the best pit stall, but the second number one pit stall is going to be the very last pit stall, because if you're involved in a wreck, your five-minute clock starts the second that you cross the line. If you've been involved in an accident, that's when your 5 minutes starts. So if you're the closest to the back where pit road enters, which would be the 40th spot, that's where I'd want to be. And then that's going to give me probably 4.5 minutes to work on my car. And that's because you have to be off pit road and back onto the track before the five-minute time expires. So the number one and the number 40th spot is going to be the two most coveted, because if you're in spot number one and you got to drive and you got a damaged race car, let's say Talladega, that's a long way. You'll burn up a minute and a half going down pit road just at 55 miles an hour trying to get to your pit stall. And, you know, they're limited how many people can go over the wall. If too many people go over the wall to work on a car, then that's them, you know, take it to the garage. You know, you're done. And like I said, you know, I just got a itchy feeling that this will not last long. You know, it's going to be more a hoopla and, it's not what you think it is.
Whoa, Steve. Whoa. I think you kind of just took this into a little bit different direction. I mean, what do you mean that it's a lot of hoopla? I mean, here we are agreeing that, you know, the penalties may seem excessive, but in reality, I think that we're all jumping the gun. And NASCAR hasn't – maybe NASCAR's not calling the shots here. Maybe it is Monster Energy. And they have a marketing team that's better than NASCAR could have ever figured, because they actually study online presence, and they're actually figuring out where their money needs to go in order to make their enterprise a stronger entitlement sponsor, so that they are – getting something back in return off of these major sports investments. I mean, I can see where, you know, the frustration can come in on your behalf, but at the same time, I mean, don't you agree that these things are what the sport needs to do to move forward?
Yes and no. Yes, I do. But you take a Rick Hendrick, a Joe Gibbs. You know, if you finish 35th or 36th below, you only get 1 point for finishing the race. It pays points for the segments, but you only get 1 point for 36 or below.
But you take a Hendrick car and you put them in that 38th position, then what you've done is you've made that 35th car, that 34th car that finishes there every week, you've moved him up one more spot, which is a little bit more money, which adds a little bit more to what they can earn each year. I mean, I really just see this as a crackdown on competition. In other words, NASCAR understands right now that they cannot fold any more race teams. If you had a major race team like Joe Gibbs just up and shut down, like we've seen Ginn Motorsports and DEI and Michael Waltrip Racing, NASCAR's one race team away from completely changing the whole geographic of what NASCAR racing is. CJ, let's bring you in real quick. What do you think about all this?
Mike Messerschmidt says three-lap wait happened at Sydney Coliseum.
Your microphone isn't very clear. Maybe my end. Steve, can you hear him well?
I can't hear him at all.
Okay, CJ.
Not sure what's up with my reception tonight.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you sound a little bit better then.
I said Mike messaged me, said the three-lap wait happened to Timmy Salamino in the Welland Modified Tour last season at Bristol. Took him out of winning contention. So obviously, you know, that three-lap rule could definitely change things up. The five-minute rule and the pit stall, obviously that is going to make these teams be even more strategical, I guess we'll make up a word there, about their pit stops, obviously. Not only trying to be getting in and off pit road during the race, but now the possibility of, you know, what if you have damage. Every change that I've heard so far that has come, whether it's because of NASCAR, whether it's because of Monster's influence, or if it's a combination, I'm hoping maybe they're working together and, you know, just pinging ideas off each other ever since the sponsorship happened, and maybe, you know, a combination of both of them. But everything that I've heard so far, I like, and I think that it's going to make the sport better. That's just like you're talking about the money thing. You're talking about, you know, them getting just one more position, so that their purse just got a little bit better, and that adds up and helps these smaller teams. I like this wreck. You got 5 minutes. There's no replacing the front ends no more. There's a lot of things now that these smaller teams don't have to worry about funding. They don't have to worry about bringing an extra whole front end clip, because they know if Jimmy Johnson, you know, damages the front of his car, he's not able to replace that no more. That they, you know, they got what they can do in 5 minutes in the pit stall, and that's it. And I think that's going to help minimize the cost of this sport, especially for these lower-funded teams, and I think that's another thing that is a big plus about some of these changes.
Oh, I concur, definitely. I think that it is a shout-out to Brian France for whatever he's done. If he's given the keys of the Cadillac over to Monster Energy, then I think we should all applaud him, because it's about time. They're obviously moving in a different marketing atmosphere, and you know, we can sit here and toot the horn and wait until before we even see the product. But, you know, there is on-the-track product that seems to be a problem, and a lot of it has to do with aerodynamics, and a lot of it has to do with tires. And now we've got a couple of tracks being repaved. Steve, I want to know your hot take on the new pavement tracks and how that's going to affect competition.
Well, I think what Bruton and Smith and them are doing out at Texas, I mean, they are throwing this thing down. I heard the other day that they're like 75% complete with the repave, and they got all the French drains in to help control the weepers. And, you know, they are really moving along. They've had good weather. And, you know, like I think it's Mark Smith at Rudd's Track said, you know, we've got lights that can work 24/7 if they need. to do to get this job done. They're going to bring out that tire thing that's going to, you know, put rubber back in and aggregate the track a little bit to put some rubber down. I just, you know, think the big test is going to be will be Atlanta. After they get done with Atlanta, you know, in March, then they're going to tear it up and completely repave it for next year. And it'll have, you know, all summer just about sit there and cure. So that'll be a really interesting race next year when they go back to Atlanta, because they're going to be completely redoing that track again.
You know
they're taking,
and I think Texas has always had its own face. It's always produced great racing. I've seen some of the best IndyCar racing I've ever seen in my life at Texas. Sure. But Atlanta seems to be the track that's on the threshold. And if you go to Atlanta, I've been to the Hall of Fame, Georgia Hall of Fame, Motorsports Hall of Fame. I've met the guy who rings the bell for Chase Elliott and all the Elliotts. Atlanta, the people around Atlanta, they embrace Atlanta Motor Speedway. But Atlanta kind of falls into that 1.5-mile cookie-cutter track, and outside of the rural area where a lot of these moonshiners have always gone down to Atlanta once or twice a year to celebrate the big race of the year, these people are passing away and gone with the sport. Now Atlanta's left kind of without an identity, and a lot of that's because of how the schedule's been changed and all. Is a repave at Atlanta really going to improve racing there? I'd like Steve's take on that, and then when you're done, I want CJ's take on that.
Well, I think that it will. You know, they're not making any changes like they're doing to the Texas. Texas, they're taking banking out, and they're adding more. I think they're adding 14 feet of track, some kind of way. Anyway, they're taking banking out. So Atlanta's going to be the biggest. Texas is going to be the biggest Achilles heel, where Atlanta, you know, like I said, they're going to repave it, then it's going to sit through all the hot summer sun, and then the winter, then go back on again. And, you know, I got a feeling that the Atlanta track is going to be really, really interesting next year. I mean, I hope for Britton Smith and all their sakes, I hope that track produces. I mean, it's always produced good racing. They just need to fill the stands in that place. I mean, you know, they just need to get out and promote the track. I mean, they do a good job, but people need to go to that track. Not, you know, I'm afraid it might come off the circuit one day, you know.
Back to what my question was, if they're going to go to this repavement, I know they've restructured Atlanta once before. They've reconfigured Phoenix four different times already. So, you know, a reconfiguration or a chance to turn it into a short track, or even, you know, does Atlanta carry the chance to maybe be a road course track? I'm kind of adding to this now, but I can tell that you know a lot about Atlanta Motor Speedway as well, Steve, and this is kind of a local track for us. I do believe you've been to a race at Atlanta, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been to two races at Atlanta. I went the year that they had the big blizzard. I went the next week and froze to death. I had a great time, true story, I had $27.50 in my name. I went racing on $27.50. I had a great time. It was,
couldn't even buy a hot dog when you were there, could you?
I bought a Coke.
And this is a true story. Now I've heard this before.
That's true story.
That was your
That's
first NASCAR story. Race, wasn't it?
It was my second. I had been to Richmond earlier, about a year before that. Then I went to Atlanta the year after the blizzard, and because it was the very next weekend, and man, it was really a good time. But I mean, I really liked that track. You know, it just, you know, people, they got to get out and support the saying. I was listening to a guy today, and he was talking about how he buys his tickets, and he said he buys all his tickets off StubHub, and what he does is he waits till he gets closer and closer, and people start dropping the price of tickets. He said last year he bought a $150 ticket for $20 off StubHub.
Wow.
Like, golly.
Well, that could be one that we run away to. Definitely a good stop, and Atlanta does need the support. Southern Racing was born between Talladega and Atlanta. There's a lot of local tracks between that area that have, you know, been famous, and it's definitely a reason to go out and support that track and a new repave. Hopefully they'll get a good date set for them here soon. And if not, then, you know, road course racing seems to be the next phase of NASCAR. But, CJ, I want to get your take real quick on the repave. What do you? How do you think it's going to affect the competition?
I hope it makes it more competitive. You know, I went to Atlanta my first time in 95. It used to be the last race of the season. Gordon won the championship that year. I got to go again about 2 or 3 years ago. I went as media with 110 Nation. And it reminds me a lot of, like, Charlotte. Like, it just gets – the drivers and the field get so sprawled out, and there's really not – it's not enough action for me. There's a few tracks out there that I'll watch, but if I doze off, my feelings are not hurt. I'm hoping that the reconfiguration or the repaving of the track, I'm hoping that this new segment racing, and I'm hoping the aerial, you know, the package that they've modified, I hope all that helps the competition at these tracks like Atlanta. There's just so much history at this track. And,
I want you to hold that point real quick, because what I want to say is Atlanta has had a history of being a rough man's track. It's not like Atlanta was brought along to you know, in other words, when Atlanta was built, it was a lot like Charlotte at that time. If you could keep the car together for 500 laps, you might have a chance to win. It was a ruling, grueling race, and it always has been. But that nature of NASCAR has kind of changed as we've progressed, and so the beatings don't necessarily on the equipment. You know, equipment lasts more now, so it's really taken a different turn in the style of racing. And so, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead and finish.
I say there's a lot of history at that track, and we've in our days have seen some really good races, and I just hope that this repave, you know, it ends up being one of those things with all the other things that NASCAR has done with the rule packages and the segments and everything else, makes this race be a more competitive race, make it deep. You know, I can remember going to Kentucky the first couple of times. I'm like, God, you know, it's convenient because it's not that far of a drive for us, and I get to go home to Ohio and spend time. But the competition, it was just, and then they changed the package, and Kentucky has become a very fun race to watch. And, of course, they did their whole repaving as well. So I'm hoping that when it's all said and done, I hope Atlanta and the competition, what we get to see, it greatly increases that.
Well, and I agree. And, you know, what I keep saying is these, one of these tracks is going to give, and one of these tracks is not going to be around in the next few years because, I mean, you've got Iowa out here in the middle of nowhere attracting a sellout crowd every single time, you know, where everybody's retracting bleachers. You can go sell bleachers to Iowa right now because they're selling tickets. And NASCAR's got to turn to that venue. What are the chances? I'll get y'all's last takes here in just a second. But what do you think the chances are of a racetrack like Iowa being added to the NASCAR schedule here in the next couple of years? And I'll start with you, CJ.
I don't know if it's beneficial for it. We got the same thing going on with Eldora. It's one of those things. It's different. It's its own thing. And if you bring NASCAR, and we've seen this in quite a few tracks, and until NASCAR finds itself being back on top of the map and growing like it once did, it gets out of this recession where the ratings are down, the attendance down era they're in right now. Until they fix that, I wouldn't even mess with Iowa, because you've got a great thing with the races you do have going there. You got all eyes in that area on NASCAR. If you bring in a product that people are just not really 100% on right now, all you're going to do is just kind of detour people to want to go. So I maybe sometime down the line, but I think until NASCAR gets what it's trying to get down, then I think you leave it alone.
Steve, what's your take on that?
I agree 100% there. You know, if you go back and look at Kentucky Speedway, before they had a cup race, they sold out all the time.
Yep.
And when they announced, hey, we're going cup racing, you know, it's like nobody shows up for the Nationwide Xfinity race. You know, and You know, of course, they had that bad debacle the first year of the Cup race there, that the infrastructure just wasn't there. But, I mean, they have since fixed that. And, I mean, it's easy in, easy out. But, you know, it's you got to get excitement back into this race. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Excitement sells. You know, you don't go to a theme park and go ride a roller coaster not expecting to be excited about, man, you know, the thrill of riding that roller coaster.
Right.
And the same thing with NASCAR. You know, what I personally like, I like to see some of these guys just truly be mad at one another. I like to see them come with cars that are, you know, not as sleek as they are. You know, stretchy.
And non-aero-dependent, or at least taking some of the aero away.
Taking some of the aero away from them, you know, get them back where they can, you know, punch a big hole in. Look at the trucks. The trucks, they punch a big hole in the air, and they get around that track. And I'll say it again, get them up off the ground. Because, I mean, it just irritates me. I guess I'm so old school with this stuff that I like to look at a car and see, man, this joker is up to, you know, it's up off the ground. Watch it go around the curve. I just want those guys to work the cars. I don't want them to have to sit there and, hey, it's like a Sunday drive, you know. Of course, when it starts going bad, you know, you watch them. They start sawing on that wheel left and right, you know. And that's when it gets interesting. When they have a saw on that wheel left and right to make it turn and all like that, you know, get out and put a show on for the fans. It's all if you can't put on a show, you know.
It's entertainment first, Steve, and I agree. And if I could do one thing to change the racing, I would bring in commentators that commentate a lot like soccer commentators overseas do, because that's the kind of excitement that you build within the fan base. These former drivers and their separation from regular people. I've seen a lot on the sports shows this week. The old "you've never played the game" card being given to real journalists. You know, this is a moment where athletes and superstar drivers are saying, "Well, you don't know nothing about this because you've never competed." But in reality, that's not reaching out to your fan base, because that's telling all your fans you don't know anything about the sport because you've never played it. And that's where you have a disconnect with your fan base. And, Steve, you're exactly right. You've got to make it more exciting. We've got to have commentators who are going to put their life into making this exciting. That's what Ken Squire and Dick Bergeron did beforehand. Jeff Gordon is not going to build you anticipation for a great race. He's going to get paid his $8 million to come up there and give you his opinion. CJ, you want to close on that?
And another thing that I think that is kind of a downside of having some of these veteran drivers like Darrell Waltrip. Okay, it was fine when he first went into the studio, when he first had gotten out of the car, and he could relate to us what was going on in the car. Now you're talking 20 years later. He's now only speculating or going off what Gordon is saying or someone else says. Now he has no really knowledge because the cars have changed so much since he was in the car. And I don't necessarily have a problem with these veterans going up there in the studio. I agree. I would like to have the professionals up there versus ex-drivers. It is nice to have the insight. Like Larry McReynolds is freaking awesome.
Do you think the guy who says "let's get ready to rumble" or the UFC guy? Do you think that the UFC guy announcer ever played or ever fought in UFC? Do you think these soccer announcers ever played soccer? You've got to have that kind of talent in the booth to sell what it is that you know. WWF was brilliant because those two guys that always commentated in the background made WWF exciting, right? I mean, come on, can I get an agreement with all y'all on that one, right?
Yeah,
you got it.
So, you know, while NASCAR's making these changes on the competition, we'll close with, you know, there's still that one last thing. We need to make it entertainment worth watching. And It's great to see Dale Jr., and it's good to have y'all agree with me on this one, because I'm a journalist. I would love the opportunity to sit behind that desk and commentate a race. The days of Dave Moody and the Godfather and Eli Gold, these days are being outnumbered because professional sports believes, oh, well, in order to build interest, we have to put the 2000 Daytona 500 winner in the booth so that you'll watch the race. It worked with Ned Jarrett. Ned Jarrett was an educated man, and you know, he also left the sport very early and was able to put in a whole nother career in the broadcasting. And so, you know, of course there's a good story out of all this that, you know, Ned Jarrett was one of the greatest announcers to ever live and still is one of the most iconic. But he was a driver first, but now we're talking about people who are separated themselves from the common man who are trying to sell us a sport that obviously needs a boost in entertainment.
And I agree with you on that. You know, that the changes that are being made, personally, I don't know of any other motorsports that pays point in the middle of the race. None of them that I know of. If I'm wrong, then someone please correct me. I mean, maybe motorcycle racing, but I'm talking about stock car, you like short track, the Saturday night guys that run. I don't know if anybody's going to pay points in the middle of a race. And that is the biggest problem that I've got with what NASCAR is doing is, why are you going to pay somebody for, you know, points for winning?
Yes, they do, Steve, and I'm going to stop you right there before we get too deep into this, because it's a great point that you say that, but as your son, I'm in short track racing. They have a thing in heat racing called passer points. And so how they award these passer points is if your car, in other words, whoever passes the most cars, they get a point for their final points to go into the race. In other words, they earn points in heat racing just like they do in the features. We actually at Hattiesburg Speedway had a driver win the championship from heat racing points, and he beat the national champion crate late model driver. So yeah, you know, it doesn't make any sense that you would have a national points driver not win his local track, but it is a such thing, and most of the time in this smaller league of racing, it's called passer points. So I'll just give you that real quick, but go ahead and close out there.
All right, I wasn't aware of that. That's not the way it was when I raced years. Well, I didn't race, but when I worked track years ago, when you know, it was paid first through ever how many cars, you know, in the feature race. But now I just want to say that, you know, some of the changes they got, you know, one of the other rules that they're changing is, you know, you can be held on pit NASCAR says you can be held on pit road. You know, for three laps, or you might have to do a pass-through penalty or a stop-and-go. It's a lot of things, you know, need to go in there and read about the new changes that's came down today. That's got me more excited than anything about the whole season is that the fact is, you know, that if they're going to do this. But my only question is, will they have the appeals board like they've had before, and which has been used to help and boost, you know, change rules at the last minute. You know, okay, he got held on pit road for three laps. Now that if he goes to appeals board, will he be, and then if he finds, they say, well, okay, you shouldn't have held him on pit road for three laps. So are they going to have to go back and give him three laps back, and then, okay, you would have finished 30th, you would have finished, you know, 15th or whatever, you know. You know, that's my biggest question. And I've not heard an answer to that question yet. But as far as all this other stuff, you know, I'm not much on it. But this last go-round of penalties and all, I am 100% on board with that. No problem. All right.
That's great. And we'll look more into that this week, Steve. Looking forward to having you on as an analysis commentator again for next week's show. And CJ, you want to close this thing out real quick?
I just want to put this food for thought in you guys' head as we wrap the night up and look forward to next Thursday night. by the time we sit here again next Thursday night, the K&M Pro Series is done kicked their season off. The ARCA Series is done kicked their season off. We'd already seen the Busch Clash, the set, the lineup for the Daytona 500, and two 125 or 150 race. We're going to get to see all that before we do this again next week. That is some exciting stuff.
I think you hit the nail on the head. And this is a pretty exciting show here tonight. I want to thank all the listeners for listening in. And I know the show's kind of gone in a different direction than what it normally is, but I'm enjoying having the discussion about the Upper Series racing. And we'll kind of dip more into short track racing later on in the season. Got a good thing going here, and I think that the exposure that NASCAR and Monster Energy is going to bring to the sport this year, it needs a lot of positive reaction, and you're going to find that right here on One Tip Nation. And we want to thank Mr. CJ Sports for giving us this opportunity to be on here. Of course, check us out, Yellow Caution Flag on Facebook and Flag of Caution on Twitter. Follow Steve at the 28 fan on Twitter. He'll be glad to add you there. And, of course, look us up on 110 Nation and all the affiliates that surround us. Y'all have a great week here coming up. It's, like we said, it's Daytona and Speed Weeks. Enjoy some racing. There's a whole lot of racing that's going to take place between now and the next time that we're on the air, and we appreciate Mr. CJ Sports for pointing that out, because there is nothing better than this week in racing. This is the ultimate kickoff. There's no other sport that leads up. Well, first of all, there's only two sports in this world, and that's boxing and racing, and everything else is just a game. But we also have a better prelude to the season than boxing and any other game that you can play. CJ, I heard you laugh on that. Have you ever heard that one before?
I've heard it said differently. I've heard from NASCAR commercial saying all the rest of them are just a game, or NASCAR, not just a game, or something to that matter. So I've heard it. Simply, I just chuckle every time I hear it, though.
It's always a good one to pull. Steve, we want to thank you for being on and bringing your analysis and all. And we'll dig more into the being a week from now and having the different series already out for competition, we'll get to see firsthand how they handle this new rule infraction. Because, you already know from everything that we've seen from Michael Waltrip's deal to Carl Long with a big motor in the All-Star race years ago, every opportunity given for these drivers or these teams to get a competitive advantage, they're willing to try. And I'm sure there'll be somebody on the outside looking in next week that will have a perfect example of how NASCAR is going to handle these situations. But until then, race fans, thank y'all for listening to us. Thank y'all for joining us on this Thursday night. I think the hour went quicker than it ever has. And once again, we want to thank Mike Perricone. Make sure that y'all are listening tomorrow night to Hot Laps and Stats with Mr. Perricone and Mr. CJ Sports and all the other shows here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio. We want to give y'all a great evening, good night, and farewell.